In one of the documents, it says 99.9% sure it is a suicide. But when the investigators went through the room, they couldn't find any identity. No credit card, no driver's license, no toothbrush, hairbrush, no cosmetics, no toiletries.
And we did not find any kind of ID card, not even her passport. And that's very rare, because mainly people has to have passport to come to Norway.
Hello and welcome back to the Bourne Investigation Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Today's episode is based around the mysterious Oslo hotel shooting. Now, this case was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and it's one that I've rewatched over and over again because it is just so fascinating. And I can't personally really put my finger on what I believe happened. So I'm really interested as to whether you guys have any opinions or theories on this case. So this case is set at the Radisson Blu Plaza Hotel in Oslo, and it was formerly the Radisson SAS Plaza Hotel, located in Oslo city centre. It's described as 384 foot tall and is Norway's second tallest building. It was officially opened on the 14th of March 1990, and at the time it was a fairly expensive and high-end hotel. It typically attracted businessmen and women who were staying over for work. On an evening in May 1995, I believe it was the 31st from my own calculations, a man and a woman checked into the hotel, giving the names Jennifer and Louis Fairgate. 3 days later, the police would enter the hotel room to find the woman lying face up on the hotel bed, dead with a single gunshot wound to her head in very mysterious circumstances. So we're first off going to rewind to a few days before this woman was found and kind of take a look at what went on leading up to her being discovered. Now, 9 days prior to the pair checking into the hotel stated that a woman called the reception desk to make the booking. For the first phone call, she was speaking English to the receptionist. And then a week later, a woman called back, and obviously we can't be sure that this woman was the same woman or whether it was a different person the second time, but this time the lady was speaking German, and she let the reception know that she was going to be arriving slightly later than initially planned. Now, the pair, Louis and Jennifer Fairgate, turned up at the hotel and provided those names, but tellingly, the woman actually misspelt Fairgate twice on the forms as Fairgate, and they didn't provide any passports or documentation to confirm their identities at the reception desk. So we really do not know who these people are at all. They also didn't provide any kind of payment at this point, or bank or credit card details, which I felt was kind of a little bit strange that the hotel were okay with this, seeing as it was quite, you know, an expensive hotel. It feels like that would have been something that may have been mandatory, but it just wasn't. They were allocated room 2805. Now, frustratingly, we don't really know much about the pair's activity between when they checked into the hotel and when the woman was found dead. But what we can do is kind of piece little bits of the puzzle together and get some kind of idea of what might have happened and have a little look at what we know. Now, hotel staff checked the records of the key cards from the room. Obviously, the police are looking into this woman's death and they need to try and find out what was going on. So we get a little bit of a timeline. Hotel staff state that at 10:44 p.m. on the Wednesday, which I believe is the date that the pair checked in, the door was opened. It was then opened again the next day at 8:45 a.m. and at midday the same day, the housekeepers cleaned the room and noted to police later when questioned that no one was in there. So by the sounds of things, somebody's gone in, checked in obviously on the Wednesday, and then left in the morning at 8:45 a.m. The following day around 9 a.m. the room was accessed again, so presumably nobody was in the room when obviously the cleaners stated that nobody was in there until 9 a.m. on the Friday when the doors swiped open. Now, one of the members of staff noticed a woman entering the room on that Friday morning, leaving a do not disturb sign on the door. My mind immediately goes to, why is she putting a do not disturb sign? Does she know something's gonna go down in the room? What's she planning in there? Or is it just completely innocent? Does she just want to have a nap? Is she just wanting to chill and not be disturbed? On the same day at 8:06 p.m., room service was ordered to that room. And it was one meal with sausage and potato salad, and the woman gave a 50 krona tip to the hotel worker, Kristin Anderson, which was at the time considered very generous. Now, despite the generous tip, on the Saturday, the hotel staff started growing concerned due to, obviously, the pair are like running up a bill on this room. They haven't provided any credit or debit card details to pay for anything out of yet. So the hotel started sending messages to the room via the television screen, which is apparently something they can do, you know, to kind of communicate with whoever's in the room. The message said something along the lines of, "Can someone go to the reception and settle the bill that they owed?" Now, someone in the hotel room did in fact acknowledge the final request that was sent, presuming here they may have clicked OK or confirm or something on the TV, but nobody actually went downstairs to pay. And this was kind of the catalyst, basically, to a security guard being dispatched to the room to go and investigate. The security man that went upstairs to the door of 2805 heard a gunshot. And on hearing the gunshot, he ran downstairs to the reception desk and phoned the police, which I feel like is how I probably would react in that situation. But it frustratingly actually took 15 minutes for the head of security to arrive. And weirdly, there's no CCTV around the room to indicate whether anyone left the room at this point. So I found that a little bit strange because, like I said at the start, the hotel is a fairly expensive hotel. It's strange that there's no CCTV, even back when this crime occurred. I know it was 1990, but you would think that there would still be some sort of grainy CCTV images. It's just to sort of indicate as to whether there was any people, like I said, leaving or entering the room. CCTV was actually invented in 1927. I'm just sort of researching it now. And it was introduced in the UK in 1960. So I feel like that's technology they should have had in that hotel at that time. So the head of security used the master key to enter the room as the door was locked from the inside. And the woman was found lying face up, gripping a pistol in her right hand. And at first, this looked to the investigators like it was a suicide. So what we're going to look at first is the clues that were kind of found in the room. And then I'm going to explore the woman herself and the weapon and how she was found, etc.
In one of the documents, it says 99.9% sure it is a suicide. But when the investigators went through the room, they couldn't find any identity. No credit card, no driver's license, no wallet, no car keys, no home door keys, which people normally bring with them. No toothbrush, hairbrush, no cosmetics, no toiletries.
And we did not find any kind of ID card, not even her passport. And that's very rare because mainly people has to have passport to come to Norway. We looked at her clothes and found one odd thing, that all her labels on all clothes she had was removed.
She had a sweater, she had trench coats. She had many clothes for her upper body, but nothing from the waist and down.
So police and security searched the room and noted that, bizarrely, there was absolutely no identifying documents such as a driving license, a passport, bank cards, those kind of things, which you would assume someone would have on them if they were travelling. And there were also no toiletries in the room except for a bottle of men's aftershave, which was very strange. There were no things like toothbrushes, which is very odd, seeing as the woman had been there for a few days. She was dressed mostly in black with black stockings on, but really weirdly had all of her clothing labels removed. And this was stitch by stitch, not just kind of cut off, because I cut the labels off my clothes because I just hate the feeling of it. But this was stitch by stitch. This was like done really intentionally in order to maybe prevent people being able to know where the clothes had come from, which was strange. Now, the one item that did still have a label on was the turquoise bag in the room, but it was a very popular brand called Travelite, so that didn't really help much to offer any additional clues. The gun that she'd also used had been anonymized, as somebody had erased the original serial number off with acid to prevent it being traced, and people are theorizing that this could mean that the weapon was involved in some sort of organized crime and they didn't want to trace it back to anyone. Her plate of room service, the food that she ordered, is how I would describe as kind of half eaten. There was quite a lot left over on the plate, so you could argue that maybe she got disturbed while she was eating the food. But interestingly, her knife and fork are placed next to each other on the plate, which personally I've always done as like an indication of the food being finished. I don't know whether this is a common thing for people to do, but I always was taught that it was like good manners to put your knife and fork next to each other on the plate once you finished. And there was also, there's like two sauce sachets on the plate, and they've been placed actually directly on the plate, which is something that I wouldn't do if I was still eating that food. I don't know about anyone else, but personally, if I was planning to kill myself, A, I don't think I'd be eating salad. I think I'd have something much better than a salad. And also, I just don't think I'd be very hungry. Usually people who end their lives are in some sort of state of distress. You're not thinking about your stomach. You've not got a particularly good appetite in that state of mind. So this doesn't scream last meal before ending your life. Also in the room, police found a suitcase with 25 live rounds of ammunition, and there were 7 more cartridges in the clip of the gun. This could be argued, and this is personally what I would say, as quite an awful lot of ammunition for somebody who was planning on just killing themselves. So this leads me to believe that either this lady didn't kill herself, or potentially just wasn't initially planning on it and was planning on doing something else with this amount of ammunition. So quite a few clues here leading to maybe this woman being involved in some sort of organized crime, being some sort of spy, obviously hiding her identity in some sort of way. Now, what kind of adds to the theory that somebody else did this and this was a murder, not a suicide, is when the body of the woman was examined, it was discovered that there was no blood on her hand, which was holding the gun. Now, this seems quite unusual. You would imagine that there would be some sort of kind of splashback. There was also a notable lack of gunpowder residue. As well as this, and I think if you look at images online, it perfectly demonstrates what I'm talking about here, but experts questioned the way that the woman was gripping the pistol. If you look at the pictures of her hand holding the gun, it is not at all how you would hold the gun, personally, in my opinion, if you wanted to put it to your head. It just looks so awkward and uncomfortable. It's not a natural position that a hand would hold a gun. She seems to be kind of gripping the trigger with her thumb, which just wouldn't have been the most comfortable position or the most effective position to hold it. A retired crime scene investigator also described the gun as an assault weapon, which means that it would have been likely that upon firing that weapon, it may have been dropped due to the hard recoil. And she's only a little lady as well. She's not particularly, she doesn't look particularly strong at all. Now, all these clues, personally, I believe, point towards it more likely being some kind of murder that was covered up and made to look like a suicide. They also discovered that 2 shots had been fired. So one was the fatal shot and one was almost like maybe a test shot into the mattress at very close range. When police started looking into the names that were given at the desk on arrival, they were found to be fake, as well as the address that was given, which actually didn't even exist. It wasn't just a, you know, an address that wasn't actually theirs, it was an address that didn't exist at all. The woman's fingerprints and teeth gave no further clues, and her DNA was found on no databases. Her teeth matched no dental records, and the autopsy suggested she was around 30 years old and not 21 as her fake date of birth suggested. So to me, this is completely baffling. Like, what on earth were this pair doing in this hotel? Why so many fake details? The autopsy also interestingly showed that the woman had undigested food in her stomach, which was the food from the room service that we talked about from the day before she was found dead. Now, this may suggest that she was in fact killed the day before she was found. So could it be that that shot that the security guard heard was just the shot into the mattress, which could have been fired as a warning shot to get the guard to leave so the murderer could escape? It could have been fired so that the person reported it back to the reception desk and then everybody just presumed that that was the fatal shot being fired on that day. Now, extensive investigations have been done to try and figure out the identity of the woman, but to this day, her identity remains a mystery. Her funeral was sadly attended by virtually no one apart from the pallbearers and a reporter who was following the case. So it's just really sad that whoever this woman was, she doesn't appear to have any kind of family, anyone that's reported her missing, and therefore obviously didn't have anyone attend her funeral, and nobody seems to know that she's deceased. I just can't believe that nobody, not a single person, relative, friend, acquaintance that this person must have met through her 30 years on the earth, nobody's come forward to say that they recognised her. You know, there's actual pictures of her dead body online, there's pictures of exactly what she looks like, and nobody has come forward about this. The official story is that she died by suicide, but many people, including myself, don't seem to believe this, and loads theorise that she was a secret agent, hence all of the removal of the identifying documents, etc., the stitching, the being pulled out of the labels of her clothing, etc. Interestingly, there was a newspaper found in the woman's hotel room with the room number 2816 on it, but it's unclear who was in that room at the time. And potentially this might have just been an error with the housekeepers, maybe moving something accidentally from one room to another. Now, the room opposite the woman's room was occupied by a Belgian man referred to as Mr. F, who checked out of the hotel on Saturday morning, and this was several hours prior to the security checking the room and hearing the gunshot. But he was questioned by a Norwegian newspaper, and in the interview he told them how he didn't actually hear the incident, but that the receptionist had told him about it afterwards. Now, as you might have figured out, that's a bit strange, because that couldn't have been the case, because he checked out prior to the event. And when the reporter confronted him about that and said, hang on, that couldn't have been the case, he abruptly ended the conversation and refused to continue the interview. Now, personally, I think that's a little bit odd and suspicious, but I think that if that person had actually had anything to do with it, I don't think they would be talking to a newspaper. And I think it's most likely just somebody trying to get 15 minutes of fame out of it and kind of act like they were more involved than they actually were and have something to say to a newspaper. And I think he's probably got embarrassed because he's been caught out and then chooses to end the interview. Obviously, there's loads of questions that remain about not only this woman herself, but what about the man she checked in with? We know virtually nothing about him, and we really don't know what she was doing in the long period of time between Thursday and Friday. Now, I know on Unsolved Mysteries, and if you haven't watched the episode, by the way, about this, I would definitely recommend doing so. But I know that on the episode, they kind of tried to do a bit of digging about the fake address that the woman had given when she checked in. And they kind of try exploring around the general area, but they didn't really have any luck at all, and no one in the local area seemed to know anything about this woman. I think that's why I'm so fascinated with this case, because not only is it a massive question mark over whether she did this to herself or somebody else did this to her, there's also the question of why, and there's also the question of how much she was complicit in concealing her identity, or for what reason she did that, or like just who this woman actually is. So that was the unsolved case of Jennifer Fairgate, and I really hope that you've enjoyed this episode, and I'd be really, really interested to hear your theories, whether there's anything you've picked up on that I haven't picked up on. Please let me know in the interact section. My personal theory is that she was involved in some kind of organized crime and something went wrong, and she was maybe killed to cover something up. Maybe she saw something she shouldn't have seen, or she did something to somebody that they didn't like, and it was a revenge thing, or just she was just killed to keep her quiet. So that's my personal theory. Please let me know yours. Thank you so much for listening, and I will be back with a new episode very soon.